The first reading today, Saint Paul says to the Philippians that he prays that our charity may more and more abound in knowledge and all discernment, so that we know and so that we may approve the better things, and that we may be upright and with offense unto the day of Christ. Ellen's first letter to the Corinthians, he talks about the better way. He talks about the fact that there are three things, ultimately, that's faith, hope, and charity, and the greatest of these is charity. So he's asking that the charity would abound more and more, and telling us to pray for the greater things. This is so important, especially when we listen again to the point that he's making, talking about how he's in his chains and these people are sharers in his joy. How do we have joy being in chains? That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense unless we can see it from that point of view of charity. When it comes to the love of God and the love of souls, then we can see it as a cause for joy. If we're looking at ourselves, which would be the opposite of what love is, then there's no joy in it at all. It's unjust, it's wrong, it's horrible. Why are these people doing this to me? What did I do? All I was doing was preaching the gospel. All I was doing was telling people to love one another. What do they have against that? Well, they have lots against that. All we have to do is look at the politics in our own nation. They don't want us to love one another. They want us to hate one another. They want us divided. This is their whole game. The Lord wants us united, but united in truth and in charity. There's all this false unity that goes on, but we don't need any more false unity. We need real unity. And the unity is going to come only in charity and in truth. And so when St. Paul is praying that our charity will abound more and more, that's exactly what we're going to have the opportunity to do. As this continues to play itself out, the need for us to practice that charity and the need for us to be joyful in the midst of the sufferings that are going to come is going to be immense. It is exactly what people need to see. It is exactly what is going to bring people to conversion. But if they don't see it in us, if all they hear is us whining and complaining and talking about how wrong this is and unjust it is, that's not going to bring anybody to conversion. They might agree with us, but they're not going to turn to the Lord because we've been whining and complaining. They're going to turn to the Lord when we can acknowledge the injustice, but we can also see it from a spiritual perspective. We can see what God is doing, that he's giving us the opportunity to share in the sufferings of Christ. And if we're sharing in the suffering of Christ, then that means we're also sharing in the work of redemption. And if we're sharing in the work of redemption, which brings about the salvation of souls, then there is great cause for rejoicing. But it's only once again when we get the focus off of ourselves. And that's really hard when you're suffering. The natural thing to do when you're in pain is you look at yourself. And of course, we feel sorry for ourselves. And consequently, we whine and we moan. That's not what our blessed Lord did, even in the midst of all of his sufferings. And so we want to make sure that we're striving for that same thing. So again, you go back to the beginning of the reading, and St. Paul talks about how God has begun a good work in you, but he wants to bring it to completion. And so that means little by little by little, we're being built up, we're being strengthened, we're being brought along by the Lord. That's not always a fun thing, but it is preparing us. And if we can understand that, again, I don't think it takes a whole lot of brain power these days to look at what's going on in the world and see where we're headed. It takes even less brain power to look at what's going on in the church to be able to see where we're headed. And so we have to be able to look at it that way and say, all right, this is what's happening. I need to be prepared for what's coming. We need to be prepared on a couple of levels. Number one, absolute fidelity to Jesus. It has to be that way. The vast majority are going to go the wrong direction. And the subtlety of this thing is becoming more and more evident. These people know what they're about. Of course, they're serving their master well. But it's very subtle what they're trying to do. It's not so subtle if you recognize it, but it's real subtle what they're trying to do. So we have that part where we have to be able to say, no matter what, I have to be faithful. Even if the vast majority of people go the other way. I have told people for years what we're headed toward is just like what happened at the time of the prophet Elijah, where Elijah thought that he was the only one left. He was still going to remain faithful even when he thought he was the only one. God said, no, 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 no. There are 7,000 who have not bent their knee to Baal. Like really, 7,000 out of a couple of million people in the entire country that remained faithful to God. Not many. So unless we're together, we're not going to have any support. And if you're out there by yourself with no support and everyone else is going the other direction, it's going to be a challenge to be able to remain faithful. So we have to have that, which again is only going to come if we have struggled to do this already. If we're used to walking upstream, big deal, so we're walking upstream. We're used to it. But if all you've been doing is floating downstream and suddenly you decide, huh, I think maybe I should start walking upstream, you don't have any strength to do it because you haven't been practicing. That's why God is allowing these things now. And it's also why we should be rejoicing now. I don't hear a lot of that. I hear a lot of complaining. I don't hear a lot of rejoicing because God is strengthening us and preparing us for what's to come. Instead, it's like, why is God allowing this? This isn't right. He should intervene. He will. He's sending his mom. She's going to clean the whole thing up. But that's the secondary point. That comes at the end of this whole mess. So just remain faithful. And then there's the other part of it. And that is that in the midst of the struggles, just to be able to keep the focus on the Lord, to maintain that charity toward others. So it's the love of God and the love of souls. Ask yourself, do I really have a true love of souls? Do I want people to be able to go to heaven? Do I want the conversion of sinners? It's a whole lot easier to say, I hope they're all condemned and they fry for eternity. That's not a Christian way of looking at things. It's like, yeah, but look at what they're doing. Yeah, that's why we're praying for their conversion. What if Jesus had that attitude toward us? We all know where we would be, don't we? So thanks be to God, he doesn't have that attitude, and if we're members of Christ, we can't either. And in fact, what we have to be able to do is to say exactly what he did. I have longed for this moment. For this I came into the world. I've told you many times, God created you now for a reason. If he wanted you alive a couple of hundred years ago, he would have created you then. He didn't. He created you now in the midst of this mess to make you a saint. Now. The grace is there. If we can see it, if we can embrace it, if we can accept it, then we can rejoice in it. If all that we see are all the problems and all the difficulties and all the injustices and all that's true, I'm not suggesting it's not. But if that's all we're looking at, we're going to be angry, we're going to be depressed, We're going to be miserable. We're going to be feeling sorry for ourselves. We're going to be whining and complaining because we're not looking at the Lord. Yeah, all these things are true, but we have a higher calling. We have a focus that's beyond what is going on in this world. So yes, we have to deal with all this garbage, but we can look beyond it, and we can keep our focus on Jesus. Then we have hope, and then we can have peace, and we can have joy, even in the midst of all of the chaos and all the rot that's coming. That's what we have to be practicing now. So each one of us can look within our own selves and ask, even where we're at now. I mean, we're just starting. If we can't handle coming out of the starting blocks, what are we going to do when we're talking about the long stretch? So how are we handling it? Can we see what God is doing? Can we see that he's asking us to cooperate with him? Can we see that he's using this for our good? And can we therefore be at peace and rejoice because our prayer life is in order and we are united with him, seeking only his will and recognizing that he's going to bring about the greatest good since the time of the crucifixion 2,000 years ago? Can we see that? He is doing literally the greatest work in the last 2,000 years. So the second greatest work in the history of the world is taking place in your lifetime. That is cause for rejoicing. Not poor me, it's so rotten, how come I have to be alive today? Why couldn't I have been alive 100 years ago? Everything would have been so much better. Nonsense. People 100 years ago had to deal with their problems. We've got ours. But we have the greatest privilege that any Christian person has had in the last 2,000 years, and we should be jumping up and down for joy because God is giving us this opportunity. There is cause for rejoicing here, as Scripture says. And that's what we have to be doing. St. Paul was joyful in his chains. And he was grateful that the people had the opportunity to share in that, to share in his joy, and through that, to be able to grow in charity. Here we are. Same kind of situation. A little different, but same basic thing. So the instructions are the same. May we grow more and more and abound in charity, in love for God and love for neighbor and love for souls, so that the work of God can be done in us and through us.